Hello and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 252. I'm your host, James Gilmore, and joining me, it's a grand old group reunion. We've got Peter Willington.
Hi.
International superstar. And we've got Keith Andrew.
Yeah, go on.
Local hero.
Local hero. That sounds like I play for Stockport County or something.
Oh, then you should approve. You're a football fan. You like any reference to the beautiful game?
Why is it called the beautiful game? Like, is it specifically because like the people on the pitch are quite good looking?
It's beautiful, Peter.
I was going to say you were a bit quiet and far away, Keith, and now I'm going to ask you to take a step back because you're all up in my audio grill there. Mm. And the viewers are getting a bit scared.
It's all got a bit ASMR.
No, I think they call it a beautiful game. Comparative to perhaps rugby players. Rugby is clearly the ugly game, I think.
The flow of the ball around the pitch. By teams that know what they're doing, not Stockport County. I shouldn't be hating on Stockport County. They're only down the road.
American listeners don't know what we're talking about.
No. Stockport County.
Soccer.
We may as well be talking about scones and marmalade.
Yeah,
they like scones. You can get scones in Starbucks over there as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Peter, you were away last week. I hear you were playing in snow.
I was playing in snow. I was eating unpronounceable foods that gave me food poisoning. I was,
Well, that's what you get. You shouldn't play with your food.
I shouldn't play with my food.
Did Peter's train conversation make it into the final edit?
Oh yeah,
Of course it did. Yeah, I was actually sat there. I was sat there, and I thought to myself, there was a guy, and he was very visibly listening to the conversation. Like he was like looking over it, like had a quick chuckle and all that sort of stuff while I was chatting away. Like he could only get obviously part of the conversation, and I did think to myself, maybe I should have included him on the podcast. Mm. So I'm thinking next time I'm out and about and we're recording a podcast, Skype me in and I'll get the word on the street from the man on the street.
Roving reporter.
It's a bit like you going for dinner with that Ukrainian guy. It's starting to get a bit weird.
Oh, yeah, you should have Skyped us into that. That would have been excellent. Ukrainian bants in a pizzeria.
Gosh. Adventures, guys. I enjoy having them, apparently.
Well, good for you. Well, we've been here playing games like we should. And there have been a bunch of them out this week. We're going to talk about them, but some updates first. Call of Duty Strike Team has just been updated with a brand new level. Also, a couple of new modes and some challenges. If you're not in the know, Strike Team was that kind of combination strategy / FPS game that Activision released, caught us off guard. We were like, oh, it's like a top-down Command and Conquer sort of thing. And then it's also a first-person shooter, and is it any good? And it was all right. Kind of fell in between the two camps and wasn't as good as either one. But it's got some new levels. First of all, the Atlas Mountains have been introduced. You have to be XP level 16 to get access to them. But if you do, you can go and run around some mountains and shoot some dudes. You've also got the option to do it in a couple of new modes. So there's a time attack mode. So you can kill as many people as possible in as short a time as possible. There's also a survival mode, so you can just stay alive as long as humanly possible whilst mowing down rows and rows and rows of dudes. Also, daily challenges have been added, so you can compete against your friends on Game Center and try and outdo your buddies and rub it in their face and all that good stuff that social gaming is all about, belittling your loved ones. And in Real Racing 3... you got some Ferraris, specifically three Ferraris. There is the Enzo Ferrari, the 458 Spider, and the 599 GTO. They've all been added to Real Racing 3, along with some weekly time trial tournaments. So if you happen to be a real-time strategy fan, Total War Battles : Shogun is now available dead cheap. The cheapest it's ever been, in fact. 69p or 99 cents, it can be grabbed right now from the App Store. We gave it a pretty good review. I think it got a gold award.
How close is it to the actual like Total War games?
Isn't it more like Risk? I got the impression it was a bit more...
Well, it's been pared down a lot. So now it's like a hex-based system where people are moving like laterally across the board.
People liked it.
Yeah, it's sort of sensible to pare it down a bit and sort of streamline it for the mobile version rather than trying to do the full kind of PC port of the franchise would be a bit heavy duty on the iPad. But no, it worked really well for the iPhone. We liked it, and so grab it. It's dead cheap. Why not? Mm-hmm. Finally, if you liked Injustice Gods Among Us, the console game, then you might like the mobile version of it.
I say might.
You don't have to. You're not obliged to, and probably won't. But it's been available on iOS for ages. It's just come to Android. So you lucky people.
What's a console?
Yeah, exactly. I've got no idea. I understand that two new ones have appeared this week, and everyone
appeared.
Yes, out of nowhere, and everyone's in the process of not really caring that much.
Mm. Yeah. I don't know. One million Americans seem to care quite quickly, but
yeah, but they're regressing it already once they realise there's nothing to play on them. Yeah. So if you want to download it and try it out for your Android device, it's free as games are now generally. It's very much like the Batman Arkham City Lockdown game that appeared recently. Arkham Asylum Lockdown, City Lockdown, whatever.
Yeah.
It's the same game, but it's got Superman in it instead of Batman, you know.
But it's also got Batman in it.
Has it? Oh, well, just get that one then. So, Jetpack Joyride, that was quite popular, wasn't it? It didn't really make Half-Brick, because Half-Brick had already kind of been made by Fruit Ninja, the other thing that it released beforehand. So kind of two games back-to-back that really blew up big time on iOS.
I like Fish Out of Water. That's my favorite.
That's right, you did, didn't you? That was the most recent one. I don't think it achieved quite the level of success of the other two, but I know you liked it.
No, I liked it. It was cute.
Well, their new game, which will be coming out at some point in the near future, I think it's early 2014, or maybe very end of this year, actually, very soon, is called, and this is a quite a good title if ever I heard one, Colossatron Massive World Threat.
Good name.
Yeah, I know. That's not burying the lead. I like that. That's just putting it all on Front Street right there.
Mm-hmm.
It is about a massive snake. No sniggering at the back there, Keith. What it is a gigantic mechanical snake thing, which is comprised of modular sections. So these sort of different coloured modular pods. And you take control of the snake and you have to fly down onto the earth and smash the crap out of cities.
Sorry, that made me laugh.
I don't know why that made you laugh either. But it did. So you chain these different modular bits together, and depending on what colours you make your snake out of, what modular bits you create, that determines the weapons capabilities of your beastie. So you have to chain them all different together, upgrade them bit by bit, and that'll give you different powers. So some modular bits might have guns on it, some bits might have flamethrowers on it, or something like that. And then you direct it around the city, just torching the place. So you effectively are the giant mechanical Godzilla. Which is the way I would like to play those monster games.
You've got input then?
Yeah, from what I understand. I mean, we've only seen a kind of a very silly little trailer. They've done a kind of cartoon thing. You can see it on the site. It's a special report done in the style of a news broadcast reporting this terrible monster taking over the city. I don't think it wanders around automatically. I think you get to move the thing and certainly like choose where you want to fire, choose what your targets.
Right, okay.
That's what it looks like. But we haven't had it confirmed yet. We haven't gone hands-on. It looks good. I mean, I've paused a few bits of the trailer to see, because it does show you some in-game footage, and you can see the menus are all about upgrading each modular bit and tying that together. So that looks like where the heart of the game's upgrade system is. It's all about getting better weapons and making a bigger and bigger creature. I'm always interested to see what Half-Brick do, because they tend to put out interesting stuff. And what's been nice is they've all been kind of different. They have,
yeah. They take a sideways swipe at all of a lot of different genres, don't they? You know, the physics-y action of like a Fruit Ninja, and then you've got the sort of Angry Birds-ish, I suppose. Like again, sort of like a physics puzzler of the whatever it's called, Ocean Swipe or whatever the heck it's called. Fish Out of Water. I don't know. I sounded like a really old man then, didn't I? Got one of them.
What do you kids call it?
Dubstep.
Cod Bob.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They've done all sorts of different takes on different things like that, different genres, and I really admire the company for doing that.
Yeah, like they could easily have done like Jetpack Joyride 2, 3.
You know, Yeah, exactly. Like whenever they've done a quote unquote sequel to Fruit Ninja, it's not really been a sequel. It's been a we're bringing it to another console, or we're adding something that you probably care about, or you know, like some sort of license or something like that. But yeah, I do like these guys.
I heard about them ages ago, like when they were, because they're an Australian company, I think.
They are.
And yeah, I used to listen to a couple of Australian podcasts like a few years back. And yeah, they blew up big time. And we're sort of pleased to see it. The stuff they put out is worthy of attention. I think it deserves the sort of respect and success it gets. So I'll be interested to see what Colossatron is like. Looks kind of fun, a bit more violent, but dead silly, like most of them have been. Later this year, apparently. So keep your eyes peeled for that one. The other thing I'm really looking forward to this year, because it's a personal favourite of mine, the first one was, The Room 2 is coming out on December the 12th, which is...
Do you not think they should call it, like, The Next Room, or Another Room, or The Room Next Door?
Yeah.
Sitting Room.
I think they even mentioned it in the PR stuff. They're like, The Room 2, we had to call it something. If you've listened to the podcast, you know that I'm a really big fan of it. And if you've played the game, you know it's good. Hopefully you should realize that it is good. BAFTA realized it was good and gave it awards. And I think, to be honest, I get the impression it was like much more successful than perhaps Fireproof Games thought it would be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they were a bit like taken off, like, oh, and suddenly it became this big deal and everyone was playing it and it won awards. And they've been, to their credit, incredibly self-critical. The stuff they've said afterwards is like, we're working on the sequel, and they turned around and went, look, the first game, it won all these awards and people really loved it and stuff, that's great, but we know there was loads of stuff wrong with it. We think it was too simplistic in areas, we think it was far too short, we think it ended too abruptly, and they've, you know, laid all this stuff out there and said, look, you know, these are all the things that we think we've done wrong, and we really want to address all of it for this sequel. So they're very keen to make good on the sort of the promise of the whole project, which is kind of cool because everyone's just been throwing nothing but praise at them, and they've been going, no, it wasn't as good as it should be, to the point where they released that epilogue chapter as well to kind of amend the ending to make it a little bit longer and end on a more sensible note. So December the 12th, so that's maybe two, three weeks, I suppose. And I can't bloody wait. I think it's going to be excellent. Did you end up playing this one in the end, Peter? I know, Keith, you did for a bit until someone took the iPad away.
I've got this sitting on my wish list.
Basically. Oh, okay. Over Christmas. It'll be good.
Yeah, I was thinking about this the other day. You know, you can make little wish lists and so forth. So I started getting into that, like adding stuff like, oh, I think that looks cool. And, you know, I think over Christmas, I'm going to gorge myself on iOS games and just kind of absolutely burn through all of them.
Nice. That'll be fun. I've got that planned this weekend, actually. I've got I'm going to do the Stanley Parable, and I'm going to do Beyond Two Souls.
Oh, the Stanley. Do you know, there's I did that last weekend with a bunch of PC games. Oh, and like, there's nothing better than like catching up on all of the stuff after it's out, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's because it's sitting there, it's not going anywhere, and you know, you can just come to it in your own time, and that's been really, really nice. I did Gone Home this week over two nights, which I enjoyed the hell out of. That was really like lovely little story based thing that you're a part of, but you're also, it's kind of a weird voyeuristic feeling playing that game because you're essentially rummaging around a house, kind of, you know, uncovering this backstory about your family and trying to work out where everybody is, and so you're participating but you're also sort of observing, and it's an interesting little experience, but it was quite creepy.
The Room?
Yeah, no, not The Room. Gone Home.
Oh, right, okay.
It was quite like a little bit on the eerie side. They set it up as like there are these potentially these elements that could go a bit nasty, or that there's a sense that maybe there's something not quite right with the house, and that's hanging over you the whole time, and I won't say how it resolves, but yeah, it was a little bit, I was playing it like 1 o'clock in the morning with the lights out, it's a little bit creepy, which I love. I mean, I adore the horror games, so that just made me like it even more. But yes, mobile stuff. The Room 2, December 12th, mark it in your calendars, because we think it's going to be dead good. Right. Before we do our out and about stuff, we want to talk about an issue that has come up this week.
Uh-oh.
And we've been waiting for it for a while. There's been talk of it, and people have been asking us when you're going to cover this. And now is the time, because the first one has appeared. iOS controllers, people. Apple-sanctioned, officially approved iOS controllers. are here. They are out. Well, one of them is anyway. The Moga Ace Power, which is a regardish name if ever I heard one, is officially available. It's out right now. You can buy a properly licensed Apple controller and plug it into your iPhone and play games. Or can you?
Dum, dum, dum. The story takes a twist. It's an M. Night Shyamalan-esque twist.
Yes, and which means it's going to kind of be crap by the end. Yeah. Oh, no. Sorry about that. Never mind. Oh. So, a little bit of background. Ever since Apple updated to iOS 7, they basically made the API kind of available to everybody, coders and stuff, and said, look, you are now officially allowed to make controllers, so go crazy. Go nuts, guys. When you design your games, if you want to program in controller support, go for it. It'll officially work. Brilliant. So people have been doing that, and there's a big list on the site which shows you which games are compatible with the controllers. Problem is, these developers have been programming the games without actually having access to the controllers themselves. So they've been having to kind of code blind, essentially, and say, well, this will probably work, and then trust that it's going to work when the controller plugs in the way they think it will.
Which is a great way of making video games.
Yes, as we all know, that's absolutely the way to operate.
That's a little confusing. I mean, the whole point of Apple sanctioning this was that it was standardizing it, and so that any controller that wanted to be officially work on it would have to plug into the same API, and so everything would be standardized and it would work with any number of controllers. So it's a bit confusing if that's not happening.
Well, presumably you should be able to have access to at least one of these controllers in order to test it out. Because you've got pressure-sensitive pads on the front that are going to react differently.
Yeah, but I mean, that was the whole point that they weren't going to. That in the iOS 7 kind of update, when all the documentation came out, they had strict set designs, which developers who want to tap into this thing would have to, developers of the controllers, I mean, would have to keep to. So that on the developer side, all they'd have to do is work with this API, and then it would work on all of them because they'd all work the same. So if they haven't kept to that, then yeah, it won't work.
But even if you're working with something that is completely standard, so if you're designing a game for the PS3, for example, which is using that standard PS3 controller, you can't just input the codes and then never test it out on the controller. You need to then see like how harsh is the analog control? Do I need to be more or less sensitive? And you know, when should be the pickup rate? When's the biting point for certain things? Because you do need to test it out. And if you haven't got access to that, then you just release it blind. That would be madness. And there are obviously going to be problems, which there have been.
Back at UDC, there was a big rumor that Apple had actually got a prototype of a controller that they were showing developers, and I think the idea was that this prototype was the default, and that they would use this. I don't know whether it actually happened or not, or whether any developers beyond the big ones that Apple likes actually got to use any. But I think that was the idea. But yeah, you'd need an actual physical thing.
You need something. Well, unfortunately, it seems that it hasn't really been the case. Mark, editor Mark, got hold of one of these Moga controllers and tested it out this week and discovered that everything is not well. Problem is, we can't tell whether it's a problem with the controller itself or whether it's an issue on the coding side. For example, he tried to play Limbo and the inputs were unresponsive. He tried to play Muffin Knight and they had bizarre reactions to the buttons, things wouldn't work properly. Dead Trigger 2, the second analog stick is really stiff and the camera sort of jerks around all over the place. And then you got games like Trouser Heart and Into the Dead, which are listed as being supported by the controller, but they pretty much don't work full stop. So you're left wondering, like, is this an issue on the design of the controller? Is this the controller's problem? Or is this a problem in the coding of the games? And they could just update it next week, having now got their hands on one, and everything would be hunky-dory. So we're kind of at a little bit of a loss at the moment. We've said, actually, we've done this first play video that you can see on the site, and we've got a whole article explaining everything about it, but we're not reviewing it, because it's essentially reviewing something that is seemingly in an unfinished state. It's not compatible with anything, with the things that it should be compatible with, which is kind of the problem people have been finding trying to review the Xbox One and the PS4, which is you're reviewing something that doesn't have very many games, and half the functionality isn't working, so how can you get, what do you say? 7?
Yeah.
Well,
7.5,
yeah.
7.5 or 8, one of the two.
Yeah, one of those two, definitely.
It's kind of meaningless at this point, because we don't know what it's going to be until like 6 months down the line at the earliest, really. So that's the first one to come under the hammer, the Moga Ace Power. The next one that's been psyched is the Logitech PowerShell. All of these are compatible with iPhone 5, 5S, and 5th generation iPod Touch, by the way. Not anything lower than that. So if you've got an iPhone 4S, it won't work, it won't fit. These are
why are they obsessed with the word power? What's wrong with the word power?
It's a strong word, Keith. Good strong word. When people say power, they clench their fists and they show their guns like that.
Well, power! It's also to do with the fact that I think both of them can act as additional charge for your iPhone.
That's more logical.
But no, I do think
it's... That's more logical than James's homoerotic.
Yeah, all right, Mr. Answers. Yeah, his answer might have been right, but mine was sexy.
Yeah, it's very...
Yeah, so this Logitech one is the next one coming to market. It doesn't have analog sticks, though. The Moga controller has dual analog sticks. This one just has a D-pad and, looks a bit more snazzy. Mm. Both of them, though, bloody massive!
Yeah.
Like, we've seen the bigger than a PS Vita, bigger than a Game Gear.
Game Gear. Guys, do you remember Game Gears?
Oh, yeah. That screen, if there was the tiniest increment of light in the room, was practically invisible.
Yeah.
It was the best.
And it lasted an hour.
But that hour, Peter. What an hour.
Playing the best version of Sonic the Hedgehog, actually.
Exactly. It was actually quite good.
Yeah, it was.
Marvellous. Yeah, the other thing, they're massive, and they're also... bloody expensive.
Mm.
Jesus. So the Moga Ace Power controller, give it its full Latin title, the price for this one is $99.95. So that's going to be, what, like 80 quid? Like, not the straight conversion would be about 65, but you know it's going to cost 80 quid over here. You can get it right now from the US App Store. We haven't got it here at the moment, I don't think, but you can order one in or whatever. We've got one. The Logitech one isn't out yet. That's going to cost $99.99. So that's a whole 4 cents more that you'll pay for the Logitech one. And you get two less analog sticks with it. So I don't know what that's about.
Well, I'm not convinced then.
Exactly.
Have any Premiership footballers been tweeting about how amazing it is and how it's changed their life? Because that's the only way I make my purchase decisions.
Well, hashtag for the players on the go.
Exactly. I think it's a smaller company.
Don't give them ideas. That would work.
They'll only wind up giving them to like 12th division players or like school sides or something. Because it's a smaller advertising budget they're dealing with. You know, they're not Microsoft, for crying out
loud. Bristol Rovers.
Microsoft gave theirs to Sean Wright Phillips. It's really not that far off, to be honest. At least I was tweeting earlier, at least Sony got Arsenal players, which they are, pretty good.
On a bit of a side note, not that I ever go on a tangent.
Of course not. No.
But have you noticed how the Xbox One launch has, like, how they've completely missed the point with, like, the people presenting on stage?
I've only seen a couple of images on Twitter, and I know they've rebranded Leicester Square, like, Xbox One.
No, all the branding, all that stuff looks really good, but one of the people that they've got involved...
Yeah?
Is I don't know whether or not you want to keep this... I don't care, because I don't like the guy, but is a guy called KSI?
Mm. No, really? They've got him? I know who he is.
They've got him on stage, like, presenting the Xbox One thing, and it's like, it's for the kids and all that sort of stuff. It's like, that is not the market that is going to be buying this thing day one. And, like, I would argue that anybody who's old enough to purchase a Xbox One is probably old enough to realise that the sort of stuff that comes out of, like, his mouth is like not something that you want to replicate, and certainly not something that you want to associate with your leading flagship video game product.
Yeah, that's Peter's very diplomatic way of saying he's a luckily Logitech has not tried to saddle the power
good,
of KSI
good. I'm glad, yes.
So it's already one up on that advertising
side. Absolutely. Now to the matter at hand. The yes. controllers. The way that we can solve all of this is very, very simple. You do
buy a
Vita.
Yeah,
that's right. Buy a Vita. Come on, everybody. It's the water's warm. what we want to do is get a PlayStation. It's like a PSP. What was it called? The PSP Go.
Well, the slidey up one.
Yeah, the slidey up one. You get the buttons underneath or something like that. Like that means it's not as large as a Game Gear, and also you could integrate it into a lovely shell or a case, like a lavish leather case.
So what you want is a NVIDIA Shield, then.
Yeah, basically.
I played them. They're utterly massive and really heavy.
Are they good though?
They're not.
The visual stuff is good. The controls are good. It all works very well. But it's like holding a massive Xbox controller that weighs a ton.
Yeah. Where is the use case of this?
It ain't going in my pocket. That's for damn sure. So yeah, it's a bit.
The display was nice. I was impressed with the display. But the thing is, kind of top heavy or bottom heavy, I guess. It doesn't sit in your hand very well, and it's ugly as hell. And then you think, why?
I would never take this anywhere, which defeats the kind of object of it. And then
I'll play it at home.
Yeah, half the usability aspect of it is it's supposed to stream from your PC, so you need to be in the house anyway.
Move to the PC.
Yeah, it baffling, whatever.
Oh, well.
We're going to suspend judgment for the time being on these things because they could have promise. And, you know, in a month's time or 2 months' time, once the developers have got their hands on them and they can adjust the code and do a few updates, they might work a charm. I mean, there's no reason why they shouldn't. At present, it's a bit iffy picking one up at launch because half the games aren't going to work.
My question to you, James.
Yes, Peter.
Is if one of these comes out and it's really good, right? Like really good.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like a home console level, precision kind of a thing.
Like Game Gear good.
Yeah, Game Gear good. That's right.
Okay.
And the form factor is right.
Mm-hmm.
Would you get one?
I don't know. It's probably, I don't know if it's controversial or not. I don't think that physical controllers are what iOS gaming is about.
It's not about it now, but it could be in the future.
Yeah, but if it could be in the future, then it should be built into the thing, shouldn't it? Like, it seems like you're bolting stuff onto something to try and make it something which it isn't.
The view was that they were doing it so that they could launch an Apple TV with iOS games that would work with a controller, essentially. They're almost essentially backdating the catalogue so that when any iOS-equipped App Store equipped, rather, Apple TV launched, you would have hundreds of thousands of games on there that all worked with a controller that you could then use. But that whether that's happening or not, it seems to have the window of opportunity at the start of the year seems to suggest that kind of Apple TV was coming before the end of this year, and it hasn't. Even though everyone continues to talk about it as if they know it exists, but for some reason never makes it. And so you start to think, it's probably not going to happen now, actually. And so when this was announced back in July, whenever it was, that it was going to support controllers, that's what everyone was waiting for, that one of these announcements before the end of the year was going to contain this app-equipped Apple TV, and it didn't happen. So you kind of think, well, what is the point of this thing now? I don't think I've never had any desire with any iPad or iPhone game to use it with a controller, unless it's a bad one. But, you know, any game I play, I don't think, you know, they're not. It doesn't fit the controller.
Oh, I have.
First-person shooters would work better.
Modern Combat 4 would be amazing.
Yeah,
but then they just wouldn't play that on a phone. You know, if I want to play a shooter where I'm shooting people, then I'll play it on my console. I'd never really got that whole, you know, obviously lots of people do because they make a lot of money, but the Gameloft's whole strategy of launching essentially reskinned console games on a mobile, you're kind of like, that's not what I want to play on a mobile. Because if I was going to do that and I was going to sit down for half an hour and play a shooter, then I'm going to be in my house. So why wouldn't I just play the shooter it's actually emulating rather than this one on a phone that's awkward? So it's I kind of agree with James. I just don't think it, at the moment, it doesn't fit, it doesn't work, and I can't see them selling that many because it makes your phone look like tosh and what you're going to play on it.
It's $100. You could buy a DS or something, couldn't you? Just buy a 2DS dedicated controller.
You could have a 2DS, but it's not going to look like, the games on it aren't going to look nearly as good as you can get on an iPhone 5S.
No, that's true. But I can't help but feel that these kind of, but whenever you bolt on a control, these games have all been initially designed with touchscreen in mind.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And whenever you kind of wedge a control system in there, it's never as good. Same thing with the PC games, actually. When you say you plug in an Xbox controller into a PC and start playing FPSs, the games have really been tweaked to for mouse and keyboard control, ideally, and then they also include support for controllers, but they're not like perfectly optimized for it. Whereas if you play on a console, it has been optimized directly for those controllers. So it's always a bit of a kind of compromise anyway. I mean, I agree that if they can make it work, then a first-person shooter would be better with one. Totally, I agree with that. And I would be interested to play. And I will be having a go for AppSpy when we get hold of one. But I don't think that is what iOS gaming is about. The best games use the touchscreen well, because that's the thing you carry with you. That's the thing you put in your pocket and wander about with, and you pull it out in the, you know, middle of the lunch break or something, and you play for a while and put it down, and that's all play on your sofa or whatever. And the idea of how I was whipped this out, and then I have to go into my bag, find my gigantic Game Gear sighting, and I'll bolt it in, which has to be done with mechanisms filled with pulleys and levers, and then strap it. And everyone's like, what are you doing? Just play the game, or just pull out your Vita or whatever. I mean, there's no reason why it shouldn't happen, but I think it's always going to be a niche market. People who want these or prepare to pay $100 for one.
I'm in two minds about it. Like, I'm still kind of undecided about the whole thing, but it's interesting because, like, we keep getting information about this sort of stuff and people keep talking about it, like, oh, like, there's a controller, and like, we've kind of been amping up the whole thing, but I'm trying to figure out whether or not it's something people generally want. Like,
and a few specific people who are really keen.
Like, I think I do, but I don't know if I know why I do. Like, it's interesting. Well, I guess we'll find out in the next few months.
We will. And go and check on the site. We're constantly updating the list of games which is compatible. So if you are interested, we've got a great big list of all the games that will work with the controllers, or should work with the controllers, let's put it that way. And we will continue to update that list as more games become compatible and as more controllers appear on the market. So check out the story in the link, and you'll be in the know. About this week, we got a bit of a surprise, actually. Castle of Illusions, that game from, we were talking about Sega Game Gears earlier, the Mega Drive, way back when. That was an awesome side-scrolly platforming game that's very fondly remembered by anyone old enough or sad enough to remember that sort of thing. Earlier this year, they released a kind of reimagining of that game onto PSN and Xbox Live. It was called Castle of Illusion starring Mickey Mouse. Catchy. And it was kind of a 3D revamp of it. So it wasn't the same game or the same levels, but it's set in the same environment. It was had side-scrolling platform sections, but all fleshed out in a nice 3D way. But it also turned into a kind of over-the-shoulder game, so the camera will swing round behind Mickey, and there'll be puzzle sections and bits that are much more sort of, you know, Gears of War-esque, if you like, in their setup. Well, you know, I always think Gears of War when I think third person.
Right. Oh, okay. So okay.
I don't mean straps on a bolt.
Oh, right. I thought they'd gone. I thought they'd taken a real left turn.
No, that was the Dark Mickey game, wasn't it? That was a. What was the one? What was it called? The two games where the first one didn't do that well and the second one did even worse.
Epic Mickey and Epic Mickey 2.
Those are the ones.
Summing of Who Cares. Yeah.
No one cares. Yeah. Nice idea, Dark Mickey, but they can't. They don't do the Dark Mickey I want to see, where he's like pulling Goofy's teeth out.
Hoo-hoo, you shouldn't have talked, you
Exactly. I want Dark Mickey. That'd be much better. I want BDSM gear and gags and stuff. But I think Walt would have objected. Posthumously.
No, I don't think he would have, to be honest.
His frozen eyes stare chillingly out from his freezer cabinet at me with that piercing stare. Anyway, out of nowhere, they decided it just. Castle of Illusion, starring Mickey Mouse, still catchy, appeared on the App Store today. Just like completely out of nowhere. They just surprise launched it. I'm like, oh, alright, cool. So you can now get that game right now for your iPad or iPhone. It costs £6.99 or $9.99. It received kind of middling reviews when it came out on the console. People liked the visuals and the style of it was done very nicely, but the controls were a bit sluggish, people thought, and it was very short. Like two or three hours.
Well, you know how you get around sort of sluggish controls on console?
Wow.
Re-release the game on touchscreen devices.
Yes, because that always makes things much better. I haven't played it yet. We tried to download it and it messed up for some reason, but we will be doing so. We'll get you up a review ASAP, no doubt. But in the meantime, if you want to take a punt, £6.99 or $9.99. It's expensive, especially if it's only a couple of hours long, but could be the best couple of hours ever. We don't know.
The original was an hour and a half.
Well, you could, but those Mega Drive games you had to sit down and play through in one sitting. It's like Sonic. That's why everyone knows Green Hill Zone so well, because you just have to restart every time. That was fun, though. I used to enjoy it. Precisely. I just tapped into Peter's heart right there. Peter's heart?
My heart. It's Keith's heart that's got Sonic wedged in the middle of it.
Poor Sonic. Away from Disney characters, Touch Grind Skate 2. Peter, you are the skateboardist.
Oh, I love it.
Do you? I played it and it's tough as balls.
I've been watching this with eyes like a particularly beady hawk. I haven't played it yet. I might download it in the next couple of days because I just know that I'm not going to get any work done.
Yeah, the last one that you downloaded, you had to get rid of because it was becoming a problem. You'd have an intervention.
Oh my God, I re-downloaded it the other day. And I started playing, and I immediately had to within 5 minutes I had to take it off because I went, this is going to be a problem again. Yeah. Like, they've got a new skate park. Well, they had a new skate park, didn't they?
That's right.
A couple of months ago. But this is a whole new game.
Oh, just slap it out of your hands. Well, you might find yourself falling down the same rabbit hole here. Mm. If you've not played the first one, it is a very sort of simmy and really, really quite tough skateboarding game. There's no character on screen, there's no play. It's literally the board just in front of you on the screen, and you put your two fingers on the board as if they were feet, and then you perform tricks by doing a variety of swipes and taps and jumps. So if you want to do an ollie, for example, you lift your front finger off the board and then the back finger off kind of immediately afterwards, and then you get an ollie. If you want to do like a kickflip or something, you'll keep first finger on the board, and then you'll maybe swipe your back finger around so the whole board spins out. And all tricks and stunts are done through a variety of these combos. And it's ever so specific. Very, very, they're right. Very particular about where you put your fingers. Now, I'm not saying it's bad, because we've reviewed it and Harry gave it a gold. And it is kind of pretty highly regarded. It just has a very steep learning curve. So if you're
I like that. Like, the Tony Hawk's games were great at the time, but they're not really skateboarding games. They're platformers.
No, they're like combo based. You just put a bunch of combos and it was fine. Whereas when Skate came out on
the Skate
with the flippy analog stick.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Like, the number of hours I put into Skate. But yeah, like, this is so up my alley. And it looks absolutely gorgeous. And also, they've changed it from the original viewpoint, haven't they? I believe the original Touch Grind, which I haven't played, was top down.
Yeah, the first one was had a very restricted camera view, and it meant you couldn't see around the environments, and that made it difficult to guide your way around which was really tough. Here, they've got a much more traditional kind of third person camera angled up so you can see where you're going, which has improved things a great deal. Mm. We've given it a gold. Harry says, like, it works really well, but for the first half an hour, you will hate it.
Yeah.
But then it will start to click and your fingers will start to get it and muscle memory will kick in. And suddenly, you start to really get a lot of reward out of it. But be warned, you will walk into a brick wall when you first start playing. And I experienced that. I played it for a little bit of a hands-on. I'm like, good grief, I am rubbish. But it's supposed to do that. And like you say, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Can't wait.
he's in already. Okay, well, you can get it right now. It is £2.99 or $4.99 right now. Touch Grind Skate 2. What else have we got? Okay, I'm going to mention this because Mark did a little video on it. And Space Chicks is a gravity-based platformer. I've seen games like this before. It's like, imagine that you're looking at a cosmos. There are a bunch of moons and planets dotted around the screen. You take control of a little character who is perpetually running around one of these planets. In order to make him transition between planets, you tap the screen, and whichever point the character is at, he will jump off into space and then get sucked into the gravity of the planet nearby. And then you just kind of traverse your way between planets by tapping on the screen to jump between them, which is all fine and dandy. And apparently the gameplay itself works well and is actually quite good fun. Problem is, you're jumping from planet to planet, rescuing girls who are sort of on the planet going, help me, oh no. And
as girls are wont to do.
As girls always do. And you jump on, and then when you collect them, they like hop onto your back and like ride you like a little horsey to safety. And little love hearts start coming out their back because you're a big, strong man. Mm-hmm. And girls, as we all know, can't run, move, or do anything proactive for themselves.
No.
And they need to be rescued by a big, strong man.
Yeah, I mean, well, okay. I mean, this is clearly based on fact.
Yes.
So what was Mark getting all upset about?
I don't know. He's something about, like, rampaging misogyny. I don't know.
Oh, right.
I don't know what's
wrong. Do you know what? I generally don't see that. I mean, if that's going to annoy you, then every game from Mario onwards is going to annoy you.
I'm not... Right, so it's not... It's not a...
I'm watching the video now, and it's a perfectly light-hearted little game. It wouldn't even occur to me
that was
an issue. You know, you can easily flip that round and then have it as a girl picking up a guy.
Absolutely. And first of all, apparently there is a character in it who is a girl. And I don't know if you pick up guys, but maybe you do. I don't know. There is apparently, yeah. So you can play as a girl.
Someone has to save someone. And so, you know, 50-50 chance, they could have made it a girl saving a boy, in which case we wouldn't be having this conversation. We might be having a different conversation. But
it's not a 50-50 chance, though, is it?
Yes, I agree with James. Like, it is not a 50-50.
But it's not.
Yeah. Like, it's not that Space Chicks is... Like outwardly misogynistic. It's not like Saints Row's like horde mode or whatever the heck it was called. It's not as blatantly nasty and sort of garish as like a Duke Nukem Forever. It is kind of just a sweet little innocent game. But the problem is that it's just a bit thoughtless. It's a bit like, oh, we're bored of this trope now, I think. Like, from my personal point of view, I'm bored of the whole like Mario goes and saves the princess. Like, who cares like about that anymore? It's not about that. Like, but at the same time, I do accept that it isn't trying to be sexist, it isn't trying to be controversial. It's just kind of following the norm. But unfortunately, the norm is ever so slightly I say slightly weighted in men's favor, and that.
It's trying to be cute. I mean, and you could argue it's maybe trying to make a point, or it's trying to satirize the point, but I don't think it really is. You could argue that, but maybe.
I think there's a danger here, and anyone who knows me knows I'm not misogynistic in any way, but I think there's a danger here that we get into the habit of looking for things when they aren't there. I mean, the problem is that it's only an issue if you make it an issue. And like, if this was a guy chasing a girl, then it wouldn't even occur to us. In fact, so if the developer had just thought, hang on, before they release it, hang on, no, we should switch this round because this is going to look bad, then that is just as bad. It might happen. This guy
is called Space Chicks.
Yes.
Well, yeah, the name is a different issue. The name is a different issue, isn't it? But I mean,
you're already bringing gender into it the moment you read the title. So you can't say it's got nothing to do with anything. The game is called Space Chicks.
It's the equivalent of saying, oh god, I'm fed up with all these games with birds in. Why the hell did they make that game with birds? Why do they call it Angry Bird? Why didn't they make it about dogs? Or about, it's just a non-issue. This isn't, if you're going to look for misogyny in games, there are far, far bigger problems than tapping into the old Disney-esque idea of princesses needing rescuing.
Agreed completely. I don't think either James or I, and obviously I don't want to speak for you, James, but like, I don't think we're going out and saying this is the worst. Like, we're not along those lines, because clearly it's been done. I think it looks like it's been done with a sort of like a wink and a nod and a cheeky swipe and a wink to the camera or whatever. I think it's kind of been done in that way. But the problem is that it is so rife in not just video games, but in culture in general, that when we like keep seeing stuff like this, and especially from such an amazing, like, I really like the guys at Crescent Moon. I think all of their games are amazing. Yeah. Like, they've done some really great games.
So, by this logic, so whenever there's a shooter out, you're the army or whatever or something, and you're playing as a man,
sure,
there isn't massive uproar that where are the women? Where are the women? Why?
But there is.
Why
can't I play
there is, though.
There is, though. That's the thing. There is. There was, no, out, there was outright there Gears of War. They had a massive fuss about the fact there wasn't a female character and introduced one. They did the same thing in Call of Duty franchise. There absolutely is.
There absolutely is, Keith.
It's the same problem we fall into with racism. When you're a kid, you kind of think, well, everyone gets kind of argumentative about the fact that where are the sort of black characters and there's too many white characters, and you think, oh, it could be a 50% chance, and it could be a 50% chance it's a girl or a guy, because that's the figures. That's what it looks like statistically. But that's not taking it in the context of cultural history. You can't look at it that way.
If it was 50-50, then we wouldn't be having this conversation.
But the problem, right, it's okay, right, so speaking from personal experience as a gay man, gay characters are virtually non-existent in games. So this game here we're looking at, he's chasing a woman. Yeah. So, but I'm not going to go and say, right, well, this game is blatantly homophobic. Why the hell have they picked yet another man chasing women? Why is he not chasing men? Because you're looking for an issue where there isn't one. There are plenty of examples that you can pick on where women are really poorly represented in games, or in my experience, where there have been some gay characters have been really shockingly depicted. But just looking for things, oh, what the hell have they done? A guy chasing a princess, or why is this a heterosexual relationship? This is just falling into the same old trap.
I understand that, but I think the argument is valid if you're calling your game Space Chicks and representing them with lips.
You don't know how they end up that name. I mean, that could have been there could have been someone at the end of the chain says, we need something a bit more catchy. It could be anything.
But the fact is, the end product comes out with something called Space Chick. It's not called like Ineffective Dudes or whatever it might be. You're immediately bringing gender into the thing right from the off. It's not like we're not picking out one random thing. Like, you can say that about Mario, as you say. Like, Mario, the Mario franchise isn't called like Useless Princess.
No, but if it was called Hero Dudes, then would that be a comment on it would just no, be it's just a name
that is a perfectly valid point. Like, what if it was called Hero Dude? Would we still have, and I'm not saying either way, would we still have the same issue if it was called Hero Dude? Because dude obviously is a masculine term. It is male. So would we still pick up on this and sort of like highlight it so much? For me, and I know we have to move on, but like, for me, I'm kind of in both camps on this one, and that's really awful for somebody who needs to make a decision. But I feel like we're highlighting Space Chicks, not so that we're highlighting Space Chicks specifically and saying, look at how awful Space Chicks is. I feel like Space Chicks has been highlighted because it's just another game in a larger, big cluster of games that don't go out of their way to be sexist at all. And I genuinely do, like, from seeing the video and from knowing what I know about the studio or whatever, like, I don't feel like it is something that has specifically gone out to be sexist, but it is part of a much larger problem, which is, and I do fundamentally believe this, that games are very much targeted towards a specific, generally male demographic. They're certainly targeted that way. And the result, if you're targeting a specific demographic, the result is always going to be something that reflects the needs and interests of the demographic that you're targeting. So when we do get games that challenge this convention, and I will be talking about it in about 10 minutes' time, I'm sure, something like a Tearaway, where the subject of gender and the subject of race is handled very delicately, it brings into stark relief the other games that don't handle it in that way. So it's a really difficult question, which we could probably do an entire podcast dedicated to.
Well, you can, of course, decide for yourself. It is out right now. Yes, right now, 69p or 99 cents, and it is Space Chicks. What else have we got? Steampunks. Now, I haven't played this, and I am completely shocked that title still exists. Like, that was fair game. No one's called a game Steampunks before.
Yeah.
Like, that's strikes me as a no-brainer. But whatever, apparently they haven't. It's been released right now. It's £1.49 or $1.99. And it is Mega Man-style run-and-gun shooter, which is set in, obviously, a steampunky-type universe. We've gone hands-on with it. You can see a video for it on the site. It looks... I suppose it's 16-bit, isn't it? It looks a little bit snazzy.
It,
it,
sort of, it's that era, it's that awkward 16 to 32 bit era where they didn't quite know how to use the polygons on the PlayStation.
Well, I always remember the Amiga CD 32 thing. Do you remember that?
Jazz Jack Rabbit.
That was neither one thing nor other. And yeah, it looked a bit rubbish. This is weird because they've got him running along and it's one of those ones where the head doesn't move but the rest of the body does. So it looks kind of odd. But you can see the Mega Man influence. So you're running around these sort of pastel-y environments. They're encountering cowboys who presumably have guns powered by hot water, because that's steampunk, isn't it? It looks, I mean, I don't know, smart enough, I suppose. It's of a style. If you like that look, then you'll like it. Certainly doesn't look ugly. You can tackle the levels in any order you see fit, apparently. There are a bunch of bosses and stuff you can run into, different weapons to unlock, and a town hub from which you can go in and buy upgrades and things. I suspect we'll review it. It'll be on the way soon. £1.49 and $1.99 steampunks. The other one we'll mention, final one, is Drive on Moscow. Which, from the title, I thought was a completely different game.
Yes, so did I.
I thought it was going to be some kind of Road Rash style thing, where you're burning through the chain out your window, going, wha-pa. But no, it's actually the sequel.
Ooh. So I was quite pleased. I played Battle of the Bulge.
Yeah,
you
did, didn't
you? Liked possible. It, didn't you? Yeah.
It was okay. It was very, very hard. It was very, very hard. And I didn't win many matches. And this looks virtually identical, actually, albeit with a slightly different map. But... Right.
Yes, so it is, as Keith says, sequel to Battle of the Bulge. It's taking on Russian things. I'm going to assume, which bits of the war is it taking out? Is it doing Eastern Front stuff still in World War II, or is it doing something different? Is it doing...
Well, it'll be...
is it the Purges?
I'm assuming it's
the Nazis coming to Moscow, isn't it?
It'll be a specific campaign if it's made by the same people, because Battle of the Bulge is just one map, isn't it?
Yes, the Battle of the Bulge.
Okay. So I think Drive on Moscow was a tactical movement at one point. I do not know enough history to tell you what that was.
Okay.
I could talk about it. We would need another podcast.
Yes, exactly. It's £6.99, $9.99. Lots of expensive games this week.
Good.
Yes, all right. Good, not good for my wallet, but good for mobile gaming in general. The idea that you can have a higher price point if it's worth it. We're going to review that. I suppose we will. Someone will get lost in that. And yeah, I remember the first one being pretty tough, like you say, Keith. But if you are War Guy, then this is the thing for you.
Come sit upon my throne of games.
Here we are once again. We're in the chamber wherein lies the throne of games. There's three of us this week, so and more to get through, and it's a tiny bit warmer because last week it was just me and Keith, and it was all echoey and cold.
But now we're huddled up for warmth.
Yeah, I know. It's quite nice, actually.
Get off.
Oh, it's fun. Don't get fresh. All right. Let's start with... We'll start with you, Peter, seeing as you weren't here last week. What have you been playing this week?
I have been playing Tearaway on the PlayStation Vita.
Ah, see, I hear good things.
Yes, it is the first Platinum Award I have ever awarded in the time that I've been writing for Pocket Gamer.
Mercy!
And good, I know. And I've played some pretty good games in my few years that I've
you do
been
say so yourself.
Doing bits and pieces. So... Tearaway is, you can see the review on the site in all of its glory, and accompanying the review is a picture of my face because...
In all its glory.
In all its glory. because the one of the big things about Tearaway is how it uses all of the inputs of the Vita, and not just to a weird sort of cheap kind of way. It isn't like a hook or anything like that. It's genuinely used to good effect, and so every input is used. It's crazy. So there are the accelerometers. You will move platforms by simply tilting the Vita around. The front and rear cameras are used to bring your world into the game world. You play as a god, which is the you, and it is you, which is quite cool. So the game is actually because the camera is pointed at your face a lot, you'll often just see yourself in the background as the sun, just kind of hanging out, looking
like in Teletubbies.
Like in Teletubbies. in fact, that would have been really good. I should have worn the Teletubby mask. Well, not of the Teletubbies, but of the baby from... Did you know, actually, the baby from Teletubbies
She's 47 now.
Did you know?
47.
The baby from Teletubbies is actually what's that girl who swings about on the wrecking ball all naked and stuff?
It's not Miley Cyrus.
Did you know that the baby from Teletubbies?
No, it's not Miley Cyrus.
Absolutely true. Look it up on Wikipedia.
I know this isn't true because someone posted on my Facebook wall about 2 weeks ago, about a week after someone had posted a picture of the Nirvana baby in a pool in the same position as when he was a baby. Someone posted a picture of the girl who played the baby in Teletubbies, and it's not Miley Cyrus.
Oh, no. I thought I got one over you. It's a platformer. So you run around. One, it's kind of like a really long story, so it's not a big open world, but it is sequential. It's difficult to describe. It's kind of like you move through a story, but you can move back, you know, to previous levels if you want to. And there's a lot of side quests and that sort of thing. There's a whole bunch of combat in it with things called scraps, which are these little square boxes. To get rid of them, you have to either roll up into a little papery ball as Iota, or I think you can play as Atoy, who is the lady character.
Gotcha.
And basically, like, these scraps will try and, you know, they'll try and beat you up. I think you have like two hits or something like that. The game's not very hard. But you have to deal with them in different ways. And then sometimes they'll flip over and you have to touch the screen and you poke these bad guys. And then sometimes you have to touch the rear pad to bring your finger into the world. And you'll move whole platforms around with it. And you'll see your finger on the screen moving this stuff around. And it's fantastic because you're holding this Vita. It's a very third wall, fourth wall even. Third wall's fine. The fourth wall is broken very, very often. And the reason it breaks it so often is because it treats the Vita as the world itself. Like, you are literally a god outside of this bit of plastic and metal and glass. And you have complete control over this little universe. So it kind of takes that idea and makes it literal. There's none of this floatiness of the Sack Boys are gone because it's made by Media Molecule, but the Little Big Planet kind of floatiness is away. This is absolutely a production by the A-team of Media Molecule. It is like all of their focus. The world is made of paper. It's a papercraft world, and you can change it. So you can take your own little bits of craft paper, move your finger across the touch screen and cut out something like a moustache if you want, and then cut it out and then put it on a squirrel. Why not?
I got kicked out of a London park for that.
Well, you know, this is where you have to confine that sort of activity to video games.
That's true.
The thing that, and I say this in my review, the thing that kind of takes it beyond that is that it has this message in it.
Don't do drugs.
Both, yeah, winners don't do drugs. And it's both literal and in so much as the character you play is a message, he's a letter, and sort of figurative, you know, like it is trying to say a few things about the world. And there is a line in it, and I will not spoil it for you. There is a line, and it is said once by the narrator, and then it is said a second time immediately afterwards by the narrator. Mm-hmm. And the second time it is said, the exact same combination of words, it gives you chills. The thing that it is talking about is so prescient to the real world that you are, you know, you're sat there playing this very enjoyable kid-friendly platformer where you play around with your Vita having a lovely time. And then it suddenly pulls the carpet from underneath you and you are suddenly very much thinking about the world around you. And it's very good.
Does it tell you to look for space chicks?
It says, look for space chicks, guys. But it's not about gender. But the thing that I was kind of hinting at earlier is at the start of the game, it says, would you like to be referred to as a woman or as a man? And it also says what color. I think it says something like, what color are your hands? Something like that. And so you can pick between all these little things.
I seem to remember there being something specific about that. It doesn't say, are you a man or a woman?
Yes, it doesn't say, are you a man or a woman?
Would you like to be referred to?
Yes. And it's very, I'm sure like, when you look at it out of context, you kind of think, oh, well, that's a little bit sort of lefty, like limp-wristed kind of, you know, pandering and super PC kind of stuff. And out of context, it absolutely is. But within the context of it, actually, it's a very, it just kind of works. Like, it's basically saying, do you want to be a boy or do you want to be a girl? How do you want us to talk to you? Like, it's very simple. There's no, like, politic behind it, I suppose. It's more of a social message, the whole thing. But it's really wonderful. And it's not the kind of game that is going to get, you know, whether you're right wing or left wing, like, it's not going to get you grumpy. It's a lovely, positive game that is also critical about the world that we live in, but in a way that we can kind of all relate to. And that kind of puts it beyond what I feel is the gold award. You know, I feel like a 10 has to be this thing that changes the way that you see games or the way that games do things. It has to be like a perfect representation of that, and it has to be like an evolution.
Sure.
And Tearaway is absolutely that, and well worth the £20 that they are asking for it.
Is that all?
Yeah, like at pre-order, it's £20.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. It's very for a physical cart, like for Amazon to ship you a physical cart, and I don't think it's a deal they're doing. I think it's just £20. Like, huh. Yeah, it's really well put together, and absolutely worth the money. And if you care about games, full stop. It is worth playing.
Well, fab.
Not really.
Yeah, exactly, and that's from the man who actually has a Vita in his home.
Yes.
Yeah. I charged it up this week, and I looked at it, and I took some pictures of it, and that's it.
That's all those pictures, and I was like, why have you wasted the electric? You ain't
good. The problem is, I felt so guilty to have been sat there, and it was literally covered in a layer of dust, and I was embarrassed. So I went and cleaned it up, and I found the charger, and I charged it up. But I had the same problem as last time, in that I know I bought a memory card for it, and I put one in it, and I put games on it, and it doesn't think it's there, and it is. I haven't taken it out, so I have to go and buy another bloody memory card.
Just pop it out and pop it back in again. It should work.
No, I can't. It's not there. But it is there.
Right,
I know it was
has...
there. I don't know how it's eaten it, or it's full. I don't know what has happened to it, but I have not touched that memory card slot since I got it. And the last time I played it was 6-7 months ago, and I've not, it's not been touched, and the memory card is no longer there.
And it's so assimilated. It's
broken into my house, and that's all they could think to take. They actually left the Vita, so I've got to go and buy another one.
All right, and well, thank you for that, Peter. I'm going to talk briefly about Oceanhorn. I may have talked about it last week hands-on, but I've actually reviewed it now. Oceanhorn is the game that was being hyped for like 2 years. It was being made by these guys called Corn Fox and Bros. People got really excited about it because it looks very pretty. I think I did talk about it last week actually, but I'd only just briefly played it. So it's a Zelda-alike. And whilst you might say that about a bunch of games, this is a Zelda-alike. It is shamelessly Zelda. That's kind of a good thing and a bad thing. It makes it very difficult to judge it on its own merits to some degree, because you spend the whole time going, oh, look, it looks like Link in that Zelda game. And oh, look, I can slash up little bits of bush and trees and parts will appear like in that Zelda game. And I'm roaming around the world doing adventures and talking to cute people like in that Zelda game. And you just all the way through the game, you're kind of doing that. And it becomes very difficult to separate the inspiration from the thing that you're actually playing. And that becomes an issue. Now, it looks amazing. It's a beautiful game. They really have spent a lot of time on it. It looks fantastic. We were talking about the water effects last week and marveling at them. It looks brilliant. The storyline is different from the Zelda stuff. You're not rescuing a princess. You're dealing with monsters and your past mother's necklace that you're chasing down at the beginning. And then it turns into this whole story about this. The creature is called Oceanhorn, rising up from the seas. And it's like 10 hours long. It's 10, 15 hours long. It's a great big game. And it's about £5-6 to buy. So, you know, it's expensive going in, but you get your money's worth out of it in terms of time. The controls are okay. They're not as good as I'd like, I suppose. They're better, easier to play on the iPad, funnily enough. It's easier to control the guy on the iPad. It's a bit fiddly on the iPhone 5 touchscreen. A little bit small and a little bit awkward to steer him around. But the rest of the controls are very streamlined, just two buttons. That's sort of fine. And it all works pretty well. The puzzles are sort of kind of rudimentary. They're not going to tax you particularly, but they're still fun to solve. And there's definite enjoyment out of taking out some of the bigger bosses and, you know, working your way through the story and sort of upgrading your character and Wind Wakering your way across the oceans as you do. It's even got the thing from Wind Waker where you're in the ship and you go between islands. It's like, and again, you're half of me is taking part in this boat journey going, ah, this is fun. Isn't this pretty? And the other half of me is going, yeah, it is fun. It is pretty. Like that bit in Wind Waker. And so there's this constant argument going on in my head between like, this is sort of fun and this is very polished and well produced, but at the same time this is as close to a kind of copy paste thing in some areas, not in all areas, but in some areas as you can get.
How is this going to linger in the memory of people in 6 months' time? Is this going to just be like, oh, that was a pretty good Zelda clone, or is there some nugget of something in this game where you think, oh, that's Oceanhorn?
Well, I mean, the thing for me is more that it shows you that these guys, Cornfox and Broz, are very talented.
Right.
Certainly in terms of the production of the game and the way it looks and building a world. And the puzzles, say, they're not the toughest things in the world, but they're well thought out. You know, they're sensible. And I would very much like to see what they do next. I'd like to see them create a game that is not quite so directly influenced by another. I understand why it exists. It exists for the same reason in a lot of ways that Gameloft games exist, in as much as we're not going to get Nintendo games on iOS, so therefore this is the cipher for that. This is the way we can, and lots of people have said, you know, who cares if it's a lot like Zelda? I want to play Zelda on my iPhone and I can't, so now I kind of can, hooray. And there's, you know, fair enough, there's an argument for that too, and that's why people like playing Modern Combat or Call of Warfare or whatever on iOS from Gameloft. But I want to judge it on its own merits, but so many of its merits have been directly derived from someone else's merits that it becomes quite difficult. So to play it as an experience on its own is fun. It is good. And it's a kind of a solid 8 score-wise, but it's difficult to disconnect yourself from just how influenced it is by its source. So, you know, I'd like to see what they do next. I'd like to make a completely different game of their own devising. That would be good, because these guys clearly have a lot of talent, but I don't know. I wasn't swept away in the way I'd like to have been. Which leaves us with Keith. Keithy baby.
Hello.
Hey, hi. Hey there. What is it that you have been playing this week?
I've briefly been kind of playing 2 games this week. One of which I've played before. And I think spoke about before briefly again a few months ago. It was going to come out back at the time, but it seemed to get delayed. Mm. Icicle, I'm talking about.
Is that the really pretty one that you like?
On Thin Ice, yeah. It's a Chillingo published game where you're controlling initially a naked man on a bicycle.
Go on.
As he cycles around a very weird and wonderful world, and so it involves you just literally, you can make him move left or right and make his little bike jump, and you're picking up little bits of ice as you go around these levels. And it's just, but the thing about the game is that it is just so beautifully presented, and you move from screen to screen and the screens have slightly different perspective. It's kind of like a papery kind of look to it. You can be very close in one thing and you'll go across the screen and the next screen will load and you're far out and you're just kind of, it's a matter of guiding him around without dying. When he does die, it's very amusing because even when he's got some clothes on, he immediately loses all his clothes and turns blue and kind of spraggles around on the floor, which makes me laugh every time. But it's a very weird game, and it's kind of Monty Python-esque really in its kind of delivery. I mean, at the very beginning you kind of circle around for a bit, you get used to controls, and then he gets hit on the head by a fish and he kind of goes unconscious. Right. And the next level is him on a unicycle dressed in a suit, and it ends with him kissing a fish at the end. So it's just kind of very weird, but brilliantly kind of British, I guess, looking and feeling and a game that has I'm barely touched scratch the surface, so I can only assume it gets even better. It's gripping my attention, which, you know, is not easy to do. But it's easily one of the best looking games on iPhone. I mean, it's gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous, and very, very, very inventive and amusing and all the things you'd want it to be. The other game I've briefly played, and literally just in the last couple of hours before the podcast, I downloaded it, is Clumsy Ninja, which was Natural Motion's big game. Well, I suppose whenever the iPhone 5 was unveiled, this was the game that Apple used in the press conference to showcase it. And again, it seemed to suffer a massive delay and didn't come out. Mm. And it's just come out now, albeit kind of on the quiet, but it's just come out now. And it's hard to say what it is really at the moment. There's a little cute ninja who's kind of dressed up, and all you can see is his eyes. And you can mess around with him. You can pick him up wherever you put your finger. You kind of up and you can roll him about and chuck him about, and you put him on a trampoline and make him jump. And you give him some balloons. You tie them to his limbs, and he kind of awkwardly floats in the air. And it encourages you to do such things in a kind of masochistic way. It's kind of, yeah, it's I'm assuming later on, I've just turned it on now and he's doing little press ups. That's quite cute. Well, I'm assuming obviously the further I get into it, I'm gonna be having to teach him moves and pull off combos and stuff like that. But it's again another very really cute game.
Make him sound like a Geopet or something. You have to like look
well, it is it does have that feel to it, and he's so obedient. He just looks at you now. You can tap on the floor and he'll go anywhere you tell him, and then you mess around with him and you throw him about, and you know what would cause injury in real life, and he just gets back up and comes running back towards you.
And sucker for punishment.
Yeah, he's really kidding. But the physics of it, I mean that's I think why it was showcased at the time, is because it has a very kind of good grasp on physics and was you know meant to be shown the hardware, and it does. You kind of pick him up, and he kind of looks around while you're doing it. He's really confused, and he's swinging as I'm holding him now, just by his arm, and he's trying to get purchased so he can get that down on the ground. And it's very very well done, very amusing, very cute, not like anything else. And I'm led to believe there are lots of other characters you meet along the way that are similarly interesting. Literally started it, so I don't know what it becomes, but at the moment it's rather amusing, and I'm just spending a lot of the time pulling his limbs around to see how he reacts. And
I do that with my nephew, which is it's a fun way to pass the time. But
you get stars at the beginning when you tick off things you've got to do with him. The very first thing is you shake his hand, but then soon it asks you to tie 3 balloons to him. So he's got one on each arm and one on his leg. When these balloons are helium balloons, so he starts to rise up and looks all panicked.
Are you actually reviewing it?
No. It'd been on my radar because of the prominence of it being picked by Apple back at the time, and then the prominence of it not turning up. So I've been kind of waiting for it to come out to see whether it delivered.
Okay, so that's Clumsy Ninja. How much do you know?
It's free.
Free, of course it's free, because it's on your iPhone. Therefore, it's not iPhone, your iPad or iPod or whatever it is you use.
iPod Touch, yeah.
I've joined the iPod Touch camp, actually, now. That's what I do my video reviews on, because it's got that wide screen.
It's very nice.
It's kind of handy, although the battery life, no one told me about the battery life.
Oh, it's only since iOS 7 that it used to have a brilliant battery. iOS 7, you dare to use the thing.
Yeah,
and it just melts away.
And I've got the 5th-gen one. I've got the most recent iPod Touch, and it's just dead in like an hour and a half. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it was fine. It was fine until 7, and it doesn't like 7.
My iPad lasts for months. It's brilliant. All right, well, cool. That's something to catch up on. I'm sure we're going to do a review of that one in the future as well. So check back for all of these reviews and more on pocketgamer.co.uk itself. That's it for the podcast this week. A bumper extra long edition this time, because we're so pleased to have Peter back that we just didn't want to stop.
I'm not dead. That's good, isn't it?
He died.
Well,
I got a tweet from someone who was concerned.
Okay, I may have been slightly premature with my declarations of your expiration.
I hope for Peter's sake you're more than slightly premature.
Yeah. I did come down with something. Ooh. Oh,
is that what I saw? I saw your food poisoning. I got my visions confused. Yeah. Oh, that would be it. There you go. Got to work on my telepathies. Anyway, hopefully you'll survive long enough to join us again next week for another podcast. Take it easy. Bye-bye.
Bye.